Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, ownership, and especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts. Free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm a accredited land consultant, broker owner of United Country Real Estate, Land Pro, buying and selling homes, land and farms in Western Piedmont, North Carolina, or Southern Virginia. Give us a shout. We'll take care of you. Our office is at 3349 Cook School Road in Pilot Mountain, North Carolina, Highway 52, exit 136 across from Foothills Hardware and Building Supply. We share office with POP Design for all your graphic needs. Our company website is www.mylandpro.com, www.mylandpro.com. Our guest today is Joe Snyder and his partner Chris Brown, who's in Mexico and having trouble with the phone company, so we're going to talk about Chris a little bit. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks so much for having us on the show, or me anyways. Chris, unfortunately, is having some connectivity issues. We'll see if we get that worked out or not. But fantastic to be here, and thrilled to talk about the way we see these technologies impacting real estate with you guys.
Well, as I told you earlier, I'm 69. I don't know if I'll get to see all this stuff. But you're in your, what are you, about 36, 37?
Yeah, I think I'm 37 now. Yep.
37. Wow, you're a puppy dog, but you got a long way ahead of you. And this technology that you guys are involved in—that's what we want to talk about today. The name of your company is Lannister Development. You're a blockchain development expert. Where are you guys out of?
Actually, the name of our company is Lannister Holdings. We're a publicly traded software company based out of Phoenix, Arizona, and We were ideated and brought to market specifically because Chris and his teams really saw a really impactful value proposition in the market of these, what we consider to be Web3 technologies. That's blockchains, artificial intelligence, smart contracts, IoT, and these things, and how these things were going to be able to really be deployed right now to disrupt existing business and investment structures.
Fantastic.
And so we formed Lannister Holdings with that idea, and yes, Lannister Holdings has a trade name, Lannister Development, that is kind of client-facing consulting and development around these technologies. We actually come in and consult with companies and say, look, here's how these things work, and here's how they might work inside of your ecosystem or inside of these specific use cases around your industry, as well as we are working with strategic partners, joint ventures, and our own internal products to bring blockchain technologies as well as IoT and cloud technologies to real-world adoption and real-world products.
Perfect. Now, in your resume, you say that you're a serial entrepreneur. That's not like a serial killer, is it?
It's very much the same. You're basically just pounding your head against the wall in perpetual fashion. And Chris likes to say that the definition of success is going from failure to failure to failure with no lack of enthusiasm. And
I hear you.
So you know, but we've been very blessed to have the ability to be born in America and have all of the opportunity that entails for basically anybody in the country. And we have started multiple businesses. We've built things in real estate. We've built things in risk management, financial services, and obviously technology and software and deployment. So, we have a unique set of backgrounds that really look at these tools from an operational point of view.
Right.
Right. We owned the companies that used these tools, and we've deployed the vehicles that utilize these technologies. And we walked away from those experiences and exited some business. And during that process, we really looked at things and said, you know, where is the impact points and where's the opportunity? And we really think that this is an incredible opportunity to change how some things are done, in not just in real estate transactions, but also in real estate insurance, in real estate finance, in real estate syndication, as well as real estate investment. And that's all just that one vertical. You know, our teams get to play with things in energy and all kinds of different verticals.
Yeah.
across the spectrum, you know, robotics and logistics and transportation and retail and warehousing and all of these different use cases. But real estate's near and dear to our heart. You know, it's our family's been in real estate for a long time. Cynthia actually has a real estate brokerage in Phoenix, Arizona, and we all have been real estate investors for as long as I can remember.
Right, and I think you kind of got involved by buying a fixer-upper, was that right? And that's kind of how
Yeah, I was 21. I think I was 21 at the time, and I did my first flip and was able to, you know, had good timing because it wasn't 2007 yet. And
yeah. We all know about that.
And had a great run there. Learned a lot of stuff. And you know, took my licks in the crash like everybody else, and pulled up my boots and went back to work.
Yeah. So you've also been mentioned in Entrepreneur Magazine. Congratulations on that. That's quite an honor.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
As a visionary. Yeah. So let's talk about your vision. Before we do that, let me introduce Chris. As an absentee contributor here today, but he's also your CTO. He's been 14 years experience in the IT industry, background in Air Force Intelligence, earned a dual BS degree in
computational
mathematics. Golly, see how old I am. And biochemistry, now that's an interesting combination, mathematics and biochemistry from, I guess, Arizona State University. What a great school. And
ASU is a phenomenal school, and Arizona has a really interesting kind of ecosystem right now where the cost of living is very low, but the level of talent, the level, the amount of capital that's available, and the pure excited talent that's coming out of these phenomenal schools out there really creates a great ecosystem to work in.
Absolutely. I've been there several times, and actually on campus. It's a beautiful, beautiful campus. So he kind of got involved in artificial intelligence. I lived in New York City, 74 to 84, and started the Museum of Holography. You know what a hologram is, right? With six other folks. It came out of the technology of Dr. Dennis Gabor, and he was using Mercury Arc as a coherent light source. The laser wasn't around, which came in the early 60s, and Dr. Patniks and Dr. Leith up at Lake Forest University took his theorem and created actually the first really visible hologram. And then, of course, that went to TRW and all the major technology companies and looking at all the stuff. But I was used to visit a bar. I lived on the east side when I first moved up there, a German bar, and there were some kids there from MIT. And I'll never forget it. And I joined them, and for several hours we were talking about artificial intelligence. And this is like 1974. So that was my first exposure to it. I still don't know a whole lot about it, although my guests next week are actually starting an IT real estate sourcing company. So I look forward to talking to them. Might hook you guys up together. Might have some joint ventures there. Two nice German fellas. We'll be talking to them out of London next week. But anyway, so Chris has been a very integral part of your company, right, in terms of development and where you're going, technology?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's really, from the technical perspective, it's really his passion and his vision. You know, my role is, you know, look, if we're looking for me to code something, we're all in trouble because that's not going to happen.
Really. Hey, look, you know, it's just zeros and ones, and ones.
Yeah, you know, these guys are amazing at it, and they love what they do, and they love digging into complex problems and ideating really unique solutions and staying on the cutting edge of all of these things that are moving so fast right now. You know, we've never really seen technologies adapt at this exponential rate. And so it's a really fun time for Chris and Jonathan Parnell and the tech team to play with all of these different ideas. And, you know, my role there is to, you know, look for opportunities. You know, we as a software company are looking to deploy products in specific verticals. We're also looking to acquire products that people are building or acquire technologies that people have built. And, you know, we have the listed company, the public company here in the U.S. We're publicly traded on the OTC market under the ticker symbol NBDR, Nancy Bravo Delta Robert. And so that structure allows us to come out and come into the market with an acquisition focus. You know, that's really my job. I deal with our legal structures. I deal with our corporate, you know, governance. I deal with all of our securities attorneys and finance people and all of the teams that it takes to keep that operation moving forward and to keep us, you know, in compliance with the regulations and all of these kind of things. And then the, you know, the brains behind the operation get to show me what things that they see being impacted and what products they see having a great product market fit and being able to add value.
Right. So where you guys are in terms of blockchain, you guys are the only company that's licensed by the SEC, I believe. Is that right?
I don't know. No, that's not right.
I'm just picking this up off your website.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly what wording needs to be revamped there, but we'll deal with it. But we are, you know, we are listed on the OTC markets. We are a publicly traded entity. We have to file our quarterlies. We have to do all of that stuff. You know, I believe that there are now, possibly there are now other competitors in the space who may have done a reverse merger like we did to be
right.
public or things like that. But, you know, it is. It's a unique thing. And we went this route specifically because we wanted to be able to stand up and say, you know, this is not about shirking regulation. This is not about doing an ICO versus a traditional fundraise. This is about how these technologies are a better way to do some of these businesses. And the company that builds and deploys the product that gets used and the company that is able to look at the market and understand which products have the best product market fit and potentially acquire those products and put them into a library, an intellectual property, an asset and product library, could potentially come out and really, really win the game from a scale perspective. And so our technical talent allows us to look at these projects and these opportunities from a very tactical and tactile position. And our legal structure and our financing structures allow us to be very, very flexible on how we structure deals to get things done and get things launched.
So we've got about a couple of minutes left on this segment, but I'm just trying to visualize what you do. Is it a physical thing? I mean, are you storing
information? No, we don't even have a physical office, right? We don't even have a physical office. Completely remote work. You know, the consulting work that we do is about working with organizations like a title company and coming in and doing an actual in-house deep dive for a couple of days where it's a drill down into their systems and their operations and saying, here's how you can move forward with these new technologies in your vertical, in your company, in your, you know, in your own supply chain, right?
Right.
And so that's an entire workload around educating industry and drilling into real world problems and use cases that, you know, businesses, enterprises can then take action on the step-by-step plan that comes out of that on developing and implementing new tools and new systems and things for their organization. You know, on our product side, it's about us looking at some of the things that we see as holes in the marketplace or as, you know, areas that blockchain technology and or IoT technology or the confluence of those things together,
right?
Makes a really, really dramatic impact and has space for a new value proposition where we can actually build those things either in a joint venture or by ourselves and deploy them into the market. One example of that is we are working on, you know, a master limited partnership structure in the state of Arizona on blockchain where you can tokenize an MLP and get participation and have all of this transparency around the interactions. You can have all of your payment systems automated. You can have all of your taxation systems automated all within that ecosystem and have a lower cost basis for managing and maintaining, you know, these very, very understood and old and very well-known finance structures.
We're talking to Joe Snyder. This is Let's Talk Land. Joe, so we're talking about your company and the services that you provide. Let's pick up and kind of give us an overview. Are you selling are you a consulting firm? Are you selling software that you develop?
Yep.
Are you an investment company where we can invest? Yep. Like one of your IPs, I guess, or one of your real estate deals. I could, as an investor, I could be an investor with you, with your group, right?
I'm not allowed to solicit investments. There's a lot of really specific stuff around that. As a regulated company,
and
as an executive in a regulated company, I have to specify that. With that being said, we are listed on the OTC market. You can Google our stock, and for whatever reason, stocks do what they do. It goes up, it goes down, whatnot. But
sure.
we are traded on the OTC market under the ticker symbol NBDR.
And say that again.
Working on
say the symbol again for me.
N Nancy D Bravo D Delta R Robert NBDR.
What's the acronym for?
It's actually not ours. We acquired, I acquired a public company and did a reverse merger in order to become public. So
okay.
We have paperwork submitted to FINRA, looking for updating that and have been working on that right now. So it's actually not our acronym. With that being said, Chris made up one for it, which is no big deal, right?
I got it.
We just took our tech company public, no big deal, right?
Sure.
So so there is an acronym there that Chris made up. But yeah, it's not actually our
Perfect. So blockchain. Tell me what
the uses of ledgers in transactional business are time-honored traditions that go back to we don't even know when, right? I've climbed Mayan pyramids in Guatemala, right?
Yeah.
And these civilizations had very complex calculations and mathematical structures and things like that all the way back then. So the use of these tools is not new, but the technologies that allow these tools to be deployed at scale, to be immutable, to be run on a consensus algorithm so there's no question about whether or not the actions are valid, and the security that's available. And again, remember, I'm not the tech guy here.
No, I understand.
Normally Chris would come in and give you a much more detailed synopsis of these tools. But from the business perspective, it's very simple for me to understand. If I have a transaction between parties and I need an intermediary to validate whether or not these things happened, right? Did this person put up the cash for the deal? Did this person put up the title? Was the title clean? Right.
Right.
Does the purchasing party have an active rider on their insurance policy that covers the addition of this asset? Yes or no. Right. So there's all of these pieces to a transaction. You were talking about, eight different types of easements.
Right.
Right. Or something like that.
That's 11.
Sorry. 11 different types of easements that pertain to doing a land deal and these kinds of things. And any time that you have a situation like that, blockchain ledgers can really come in and add a layer of transparency, add a layer of security, and add a layer of technologically backed trust that can reduce costs and reduce middlemen and lower the overall transaction and deal costs for getting things done.
So,
and that's an interesting proposition.
Let me use an example of registered deeds, okay?
Volumes and volumes of stuff from, the early
1700s in some communities or 1800s with the old ledger books and the plats and the deeds and the wills and all that stuff. Is this something that can be transformed through this process at some point?
Oh, absolutely. That's already happening.
For example, where?
Propi, as an example, is a company out of Menlo Park. We know them. I think they're a great company.
Okay.
They've already raised a large amount of money, and they have already actually transacted the first sale of real property in the U.S. on blockchain. They did it back in March. And that process begins and ends in a partnership with the county recorder's office.
Sure.
Right? Because you can't actually do that if the county recorder's not participating. Now, there's something like 3,800 counties in this country, and each county has its own recording office and potentially its own system for doing so.
Exactly.
So there's a long road ahead of converting these existing chain of title systems and putting that information into these new technologies. That's a long road. But there's an incredible value proposition to that road. And now, that's not necessarily a road we're taking on. We're a little bit more focused on the finance side than the title transfer side. But it's a very interesting use case, because the moment that you've done it, right, I'm sitting in my house in California, and I own this property. And, you know, when I bought this property, I went through an escrow, and they gave me a title insurance policy. And so I don't know that the title's clear. I just know that if the title's not clear, that I'm covered, right?
Exactly.
And so with these technologies, you're essentially taking all of that information that the title company compiles in order to say, this is now insurable. We're willing to make a bet on the fact that this title's clear.
Right.
And sometimes you have exceptions, so, you know.
And sometimes you have exceptions, right? Riders, there's all kinds of stuff. But in a generic way, that's that process. So add a blockchain ledger at the county level right there, right? Don't go backwards. Don't go reinvent the wheel on every single piece of property in the county. Just start right there and say every new transaction, we're going to record the entire state of data, all of the known information right now, and we're going to start putting this on a distributed ledger, right, a blockchain. And so from that moment forward, every event is recorded immutably. It can't be changed. And all of that information that compiled enough information to be insurable is saved in a permanent state of data. And it moves forward on that instead of having to go back every single time to the starting point and run through all of the possible scenarios.
Who has access to this? And I'm sure that's set up, but who typically in this scenario would have access to that information?
Well, you know, you would need a company like Propi, as an example, that has come out with this as a mission and raised a considerable amount of money to make it happen. And then they're going and engaging directly with the government officials, right? They're engaging directly with, you know, the counties and saying, you know, these are the tools that we've built. These are the tools that this is what they do. And we're willing to come in and work with you in a consultative fashion to get these things set up at your operational level.
So they would allow certain, obviously, attorneys that's doing title, anyone that's doing title work, banks, attorneys, so on, you know, they would probably be on their list of users with passwords and so on and can get into that information. Is that my understanding?
Well, the county records are public information.
Anyway, yeah, I understand. Yeah.
Right? So yeah, I mean, you know, and that's, again, the transparency layer there. The data's secure, it can't be changed, but it's also transparent. It can be, you know, viewed by anybody that has access to the blockchain.
Gotcha.
And on a public blockchain, that's, you know, as public as you want it to be.
Okay, so now take me through a real estate transaction. I'm on the Commercial Forms Committee in North Carolina. We have two forms committee. One's the Residential Forms Committee, and then there's the Commercial Forms Committee, which I've been on since 2008 as a volunteer. And we're the ones that tweak the language and the new laws come and the new forms, you know, because of this issue or, you know, liens. We went through commercial real estate where realtors weren't, they were getting stiffed on their commissions. And so we set up a lien law, which now required more paperwork. And of course, this is a joint venture with the North Carolina Bar Association for required forms. So there's a lot of forms. So this technology that you're talking about, how is that going to be easy for me, a realtor, and my family in the future?
Again, this is not a technology that you're going to download blockchain and then all of a sudden things change.
Right.
This is a technology that is going to be running on the back. Look, you're using the cloud every single day. You don't know it. You don't even know which one from it. Right?
True.
You know, you're using Google Cloud on one side. You're using Apple Cloud on your phone. You're using, Microsoft Cloud on your Outlook. You're utilizing these technologies and you don't know that they're the technologies necessarily that are running the back end. Just like now when you go to Google search, there's, I think, an 80% chance that your search is managed by artificial intelligence and not by the standard search algorithm.
So this is what's part of the cloud we're talking about, the cloud that's out there?
Blockchain is not, right? Blockchain is not, but all of these technologies are very, very similar. Right, they're all in the vein that They are the future, and they are the right now and the future of how systems and operations get done. What I think you're going to see on the real estate level is you're going to see the same thing that you saw when electronic signature became legal, and the same thing that you saw when all of the real estate forms are now electronic form, right? We're not
yeah,
having
like
real
DocuSign
paper on a desk anymore.
Yeah,
right?
DocuSign's one of the companies we use. Yeah,
you know, and this is just a better way to do business, right? And so you don't necessarily consider all of the steps and everything that went into all of this. And you're right, there is a lot of forms. It took a lot of legal work and a lot of legislative work and a lot of lobbying to get DocuSign to be a thing that we could use.
Sure.
Right? And one of the reasons that we're based in the state of Arizona, first of all, Arizona is very, very tech-friendly. And not just tech-friendly, but willing to the politicians are and embracive of technological risk and embracive of technological change. And so there's a blockchain sandbox at the state level with Arizona that allows companies like ours to build products and deploy them for financial services, for insurance services, and things like that, gives us a way to play and bring products to market. In addition to that, Arizona already has a and recognizes blockchain signature as a law on their books.
Okay.
So both of those laws were formed this year, and so that's kind of a one-two punch, right? Number one, you've got a sandbox where you can go to the state and say, here's what we're doing, here's what we're doing, what do you think, what are you guys doing, you know, how do we bring this together? And then additionally, you have the ability to execute a contract and accept a signature and record it, much like a DocuSign, but on a blockchain, and have that recognized and enforced. And those are really important pieces when you're talking about business transactions, right?
Right. So this is Arizona. What about the other states?
You know, everybody's doing some different stuff. I mean, I know, you know, some of the work that California's doing. I know very, very well the work that Arizona's doing. You know, we have work that we're doing with companies in Texas. And so we're starting to touch on that. But it is a state-by-state sort of a thing at the moment. You know, the SEC from a federal level is coming down hard on, you know, ICOs and these crypto offerings of,
right,
you know, just unregistered fundraisers,
yep,
you know, and that's something that we kind of proselytized a year ago. You know, we said, hey, you know, these look a lot like securities to us. And so we went to a public company structure instead of an ICO structure simply because we didn't think that was a good way to move forward. We felt that, you know, a lot of investor regulations exist for very good reasons.
And this is going to eliminate a lot of paper, right? I mean, there's places with warehouses. I mean, the government, my God, they're telling us what all they got. But will it eliminate paper or cut some of that back? We're talking to Joe. This is Let's Talk Land. So we're talking about the utilization of this new technology with about 15 minutes or so for your portion. What else does the public need to know about what's going on here?
Well, you know, one of the things that we're really focused on here at Lannister is education. And so, you know, a lot of the viewpoints that we have about how these technologies disrupt the future is going to be very, very dependent on our ability to scale with talent as we move forward. And so there's a lot of work that we're doing to engage the youth. We've put together some code scholarships. You know, we've put together some kind of code camp style things that we're working on to get an intro to blockchain, an intro to AI, an intro to IoT, basic intro to code, right? For middle-aged school, you know, later elementary, middle-aged school, to high school kids to get engaged and build these technologies, because that's going to be the real people that are out here, deploying the next generation of these things. And if we look 5 years in the future, we're going to have
some really, really impactful changes in the way business is done.
Right.
You know, you can essentially get rid of all of these net 30, net 60, net 90s when you're looking at global logistics.
Sure.
Right. So you free up massive tranches of capital that have been locked up for extended periods of time, not really fulfilling capital's goal of being deployed in the best, most profitable place. Right.
Yeah.
And so.
And this is international too. This isn't just here in Arizona.
Yeah.
And what about competition? I'm sure there are other organizations that's doing any. Is anybody doing something like what you're doing?
I think so. I don't know so much about necessarily competition. I mean, we will run into things where we launch products that are similar to competitors, I'm
right.
sure. But, you know, the space at the moment, there's every industry is looking at its logistics. We're hearing from literally every type of vertical that you can imagine coming in and saying, where are these going? How do these work? How do we talk about it inside of my industry? And so, you know, the grass is really green over here,
right.
and the ocean's very, very blue.
It is big.
You know, we would like to see more people in the space focused on the enterprise solutions and the real world disruption of these technologies, as opposed to just crypto and cryptocurrency.
So this is like a Chris question. I know he's not here. So you've got a basic software that you're using, and that's applicable to all these different vocations and different businesses, or are you having to customize? But you have a base product, right, that you work with?
It's very yes and no. You know, we're very technology agnostic. We have an understanding that these types of technologies do specific things in specific environments,
right?
And in specific chains of events. But we're very technology agnostic so far. You know, we work with, you know, we utilize AWS, we utilize Azure, we utilize GCP. So, you know, we're agnostic as far as cloud services go. You know, we're fairly agnostic as far as DevOps, you know, containers and tools go. You know, and so our teams have deep experience across multiple different types of technologies, and the experience to build out complex infrastructure systems for providing, you know, proof of concepts and full platform solutions. That's really cool, but it's not where we're sitting here and saying we code this one language and this is what we do and this is the solution that we're going to give you. It's much more consultative than that, of us being able to look in and say, how do we build solutions that fit what you need and also possibly fit an entire industry? And how do we partner with you to build those things so that there's long-term value for everybody?
Right.
And then what do we see? What areas of the market do we see clearly? Does our experience set and our partners' experience set lend themselves to? And you know, what's the best way to bring those products to market? You know, to acquire ones that are beginning their journey, to build our own. You know, we have all of these options.
So what would be the most perfect situation for this technology? In your opinion, there might be more than one, but just one that we can visualize.
I mean, look, anywhere that you have a disparate supply chain that you need to be able to verify, and I mean, you know, Walmart's already doing it. You know, this isn't theoretical. You know, JPMorgan Chase is using blockchains. Governments, you know, Malta is putting its entire government finance structure on blockchain. You know, Walmart we're now requiring suppliers to utilize their blockchain that they built on IBM's Hyperledger Fabric. So, you know, these things are taking off. You know,
mm-hmm.
IBM projects that blockchain investments in 2019 will be $9.7 billion. And by 2024, that goes up to about $66 billion a year.
Wow.
So these are large industries. These are, you know, entrenched existing systems and operations, that there is now a better way to do that.
And I'm sure our military and is intelligent organizations, this is probably something that they're very keen to as well, I would say, right?
Absolutely. And you know, every university has a blockchain club and
really?
Blockchain labs are popping up all
really?
Over the place. Oh, absolutely. ASU's got a whole blockchain club. They've got a blockchain lab, Grand Canyon University, Mesa Community College. That's literally just 20 miles around our place in Phoenix. And then, you know, we've talked to Nebraska Cornhuskers. We talked with the university down, I think, in Memphis with, you know, the FedEx Institute down there.
Right.
And there's a ton going on.
Yeah, I'm sure, like MIT.
A lot of smart people.
Yeah, like MIT, I'm sure they're involved in it. They seem to be at the forefront of a lot of stuff. And wow. So, again, I'm going to flip it and say, well, what? Give me a scenario of where this just would not be applicable. Maybe that's...
Well, there's a lot. Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, blockchain is not going to solve the world's
problems. It's not for everything.
You know, and you know, the fact of the matter is in a lot of scenarios, the current tools work just fine. You know, there's definitely an argument to be made that not every idea needs to be blockchain. You know, there was a company... there was a tea company out of New York that in the kind of heyday of it being a super buzzword, changed their name from something tea to something blockchain. And
right.
Don't do that. Like,
sure.
You know, you're not accomplishing much there. So, you know, we anywhere that you have a transaction between disparate parties, anywhere that you have a logic system, if and then, anywhere that you have one of these inside of a financial transaction or an investment transaction, I think that these technologies come in on existing regulation with existing known, you know, legal structures, and they just do it in a better, more secure, more transparent way.
You know, one thing that you said that I thought was interesting was, this technology will allow money. That's Shada wanting to be on the show. It's my Jack Russell. Sorry.
No problem. I got two huskies.
Okay.
They do that too.
Yeah. But anyway, is freeing up capital that's been pent up for years for different reasons. Maybe the Swiss banks, or, you know, I'm not sure in a good example, but, you know, that was one thing that you pointed out that I thought was really interesting, that this technology can securely free up a lot of capital that for whatever reason's been tied up for years and maybe even longer.
Yeah, and there's actually multiple projects that we're actively involved with right now in that vein. Not anything that's been announced, so I can't speak to specifics, but there's some amazing things going on around how you add a layer of liquidity to some of these very, very large but very illiquid asset classes, and I think that there's, you know, I think that there's a whole world there that's going to be a lot of fun to play with.
Sure, and I'm sure Wall Street's in very much part of this too, with all that money and transactions and technology and records and unbelievable. It's wow. All right, so
yeah, it's a fun time. It's a fun time.
Yeah, I mean that's why I want to
have a few minutes left. Because I have to, I have another meeting right after this one, so
I appreciate
I only have a couple
that.
More minutes left, and I know that you wanted to say a couple of specific things. So,
yeah, what's three things you can leave our audience with? Just three important things that takeaways.
Absolutely, you know, look at technology with curiosity. I think you know, there's so many people out there who have a unique viewpoint on a specific transaction type, or they have a unique viewpoint on part of a business because of their own personal unique experience. And, you know, use that to look at technology with curiosity. If you are interested in blockchain use cases for your industry, or you would like a consultation for your company or your association or anything like that, feel free to contact us, LannisterHoldings.com, LannisterDevelopment.com. You can email us at contact@LannisterHoldings.com. And, you know, I'm just, you know, grateful to be on the show and with your audience. And thanks so much for
having me. I want to get you guys back on. We'll pick Chris's brain when he can. That would be fascinating. You're always welcome to come back. And we appreciate your time today, Joe. And this is something that I've been wanting to know more about. And it sounds like you guys are the people to go to. You want to give out a phone number or any other information
We do most of our business online and through email. So, we do have a phone number. I don't actually know it off the top of my head.
That's okay. That's part of technology changing too, right?
Yeah. 760-582-5115 is the office phone number. On Twitter, at Lannister NBDR, at Lannister Dev. I'm on Twitter, at Lannister CEO. And we're always happy to have an engagement and have an ideation and talk to folks. Really, open doors. So feel free to contact us if you have any questions at all.
Oh, I probably will, and I'm sure you'll get some more. And I really appreciate you opening our eyes up to this technology. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right, now what do we do? Wow, Rodney, that was a pretty interesting guest we had today, huh?
Yes, it was, Lou. I don't understand a thing he was talking about.
You don't?
Not a thing.
Well,
you did.
Well, I don't know that I did or not. Shadow, what do you think?
Shadow knows more than we do, I think.
I believe she does. I always go to Wikipedia when I get these unique shows, especially on stuff like this. And if you'll help me out a little bit, let's kind of go through some of these and kind of talk about the history of this stuff. It's kind of fun. It says a blockchain is originally block. This blockchain is one word, but it was originally two words, is what it's showing here. Is a growing list of records called blocks, and they're linked by using cryptography, and then each contains a cryptographic, whatever that is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Shadow, we may need you to help a little bit here. Or hash. And they're not talking about hash. Hashtag, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Of the previous block. So you got block one, block two, I'm getting. And then it's also time stamped. And the transaction data generally is represented by a Merkle tree. These are all these geek words, they come up with. Or root hash. I mean, this sounds like a garden to me.
Yeah. Need to get Gerald on this.
Yeah, really. I wonder if they got crabgrass.
Probably somewhere down
mixed
in
there. But by design, blockchain is resistant to modification of data. That means you and I, if we don't have access, we can't get to it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it is an open distributed ledger that can record transactions between two parties efficiently and in a verifiable and permanent way. Mm. So I guess it can't be destroyed.
Right.
I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I always like to have a backup plan.
Me too. But for the use of the distributed ledger, a blockchain is typically managed by a peer-to-peer network, collectively adhering to the protocol of the intercode communication and the validating the new blocks. So once recorded, the data in any given block cannot be altered retroactively without alteration of all sequential blocks, which requires consensus of the network majority. So I guess that's the security factor.
Mm-hmm.
Also, blockchain records are not unalterable. Blockchains may be considered secure by design and exemplify a distributed computing system by the Byzantine fault tolerance, whatever that is. You can Google it, I guess. And then, of course, decentralization consensus has therefore been claimed within the blockchain. This thing was invented by Satoshi Nakamoto in 2008 to serve the public transaction ledger for the cryptocurrency Bitcoin. Those Bitcoins, when they came out, I think you could buy them for $50. And I was checking the other day, those suckers are up over $6,000.
What is a Bitcoin?
Oh, no.
You don't know?
No. It's a bit of a coin. I don't know. We'll talk about it here a little bit. It talks about it. But to ensure the authenticity and to maintain the value and the security, that's where this blockchain process that Sekuto developed. And from that, it's moved into what our guest today was talking about and moving. This is real. I mean, it sounds crazy. This stuff is moving really fast, as everything else is.
Modern technology.
I think it's beyond modern. It's getting crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, well, Anyway, the invention of the blockchain for Bitcoin made it the first digital currency to solve the double spending problem without the need of the trusted authority or central server. You know, the U.S. dollar is the currency of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess now Bitcoin or other types of currency is taking over certain parts of the industry because it's used. I mean, you can go to Walmart with a Bitcoin and use it. I mean, you're going to walk in with a $6,000 coin to buy, you know, a pack of gum. I doubt they'd make change. But I mean, you can literally, if you they're physical coins, and if you actually possess them, and my understanding, a lot of people don't, they're kept in a secure area, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Just like if you have a stock in gold, you don't actually physically have the gold. You have the paper saying you have the gold. I think Bitcoin kind of works that way, or that's my understanding of it. Yeah. But you can physically take those, and there's a real estate firm, excuse me, out in California that's actually doing transactions with Bitcoins, these multi-million dollar properties that the foreigners are buying instead of transferring or wiring funds that can be, you know, I mean, there's one of our attorneys, Earl Royster, that was one of our guests.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do wire transfers anymore because they've been corrupted. It's too risky.
Right.
So, you know, that's where some of this technology, I think, that we've been talking about, specifically now Bitcoin, is one of these new technologies that's hopefully solving that problem. It said the Bitcoin design has inspired other applications, the blockchains, which are readable by the public or widely used by cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin's not the only cryptocurrency out there. There's others. I didn't do the research on it. But private blockchains have been proposed for business use. Some marketing of blockchains are also called snake oil. Where do they come up with all this stuff? You're going from hash to snake oil
now.
Wow. But anyway, so the structure of blockchain is a decentralized, distributed, and public digital ledger that is used to record transactions across many computers so that the record cannot be altered retroactively without the authorization of all sequential blocks and then the consequences of the network. This allows the participant to verify and audit transactions inexpensively. And that's the whole purpose of this. Again, time is money and so on. So by this new technology, it's not only saving paper, but it's saving time. It's authentic. It's not accessible to those that don't need to be there. Blockchain database is managed autonomously using a peer-to-peer network and has distributed timestamp server. So anything that's entered into that is timestamped and of course, the source. And then they're authenticated by mass collaboration powered by collective self-interest. The result of the robust workflow where participants are uncertainly regarding data security is marginal. The use of blockchain removes the characteristics of infinite reproducibility from the use of a digital asset. It confirms that each unit of value has transferred only once, solving the long-standing problem of double spending. Never heard that concept, but I'd like to spend my dollar twice using the same dollar.
Be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. Shadow, we could have a lot of fun at the doggy store. The blockchain-based exchange of value can be completed quickly, safely, and cheaper than any other transactional system. A blockchain can assign title rights because with properly set up to detail the exchange agreement, it provides a record that compels offers and acceptance. And that's where this real estate, you know, this is where you're being able to transfer title. That they were talking about some of the research I was doing, like in 3 days. You know, you make an offer, it's negotiated, and you transfer it in 3 days. I mean, it's pretty acceptable. And then it talks about blocks. Blocks hold batches of valid transactions that are hashed and encoded by the Merkle tree. And each block includes a cryptographic hash. We're back to hash again. On the prior block of the blockchain, linking the two. The link blocks from form a chain, and this interactive process confirms the integrity of the previous block, all the way back to the original Genesis block. So that's where we were talking about, like, the register of deeds. If you go back doing title work, And when a lot of the land, especially on the East Coast, was land grants from the King George, you'll see some of these old original records where people actually got the first transaction of land, and then the successive title as it changed down the line. Well, you know, this particular process, as he was talking about, there's a company that's actually going around to the 3,800 counties around the country and they're keeping their records, but moving them into this process. So now your sister, who does title insurance, right?
Yes.
This would make it a whole lot easier and more secure and probably reduce the cost, although title insurance is one of the cheapest insurances you can get. It's usually $2 per thousand of value of what they're insuring, which is really nothing. But it seems to me that application would make that a whole lot more secure and cheaper. Sometimes separate blocks can be produced concurrently, creating a temporary fork. In addition to the secured hash-based history, any blockchain has a specific logarithm for scoring different versions of the history so that one with the higher value can be selected over the others. Blocks are selected for inclusion in the chain are also called orphan blocks. So now we got orphans. Peers supporting the database have different versions of history from time to time. They keep only the highest scoring version of the database known to them. Whenever a peer receives a higher scoring version, usually the old version with a single new block added, they extend or overwrite their own database and retransmit the improvement to the peers. This is never an absolute guarantee that any particular entry will remain in the best version of the history forever. However, blockchains are typically built to add the score of the new blocks into the old blocks, and because they are incentives to work only on extending the new blocks rather than overriding the old blocks, or probably the entry becoming superseded goes down exponentially as more blocks are built on top of it, eventually becoming very low. For example, in blockchains using proof-of-work system, the chain of the most cumulative proof-of-work is always considered the valid one of the network. There are a number of methods that can be used to demonstrate the sufficient level of computation. With blockchain, the computation is carried out redundantly rather than the transaction segregated into parallel manner. Now, you understood all that, right?
Of course.
Is that how the radio station works?
Not that complicated.
Okay.
We got Lego blocks, though.
You do?
Yeah.
Really? You got some back there in the back?
Probably so.
Wow, I want to play with them after the show.
All right.
I love Lego blocks.
Yeah.
Build all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have block time. That's the average time it takes for a network to generate an extra block in the blockchain. And usually 14 to 15 seconds, while for Bitcoin it takes about 10 minutes because I guess it has more security features. Okay. And then they talk about hard forks, and that's a section that they transcluded from the fork blockchain. A hard fork is a rule change such as the software validating according to old rules to see the block producing according to the new rules. This is all fun stuff, huh? But it is interesting.
It is interesting.
Even if you want to learn all this stuff. But, I mean, he said the schools are now setting up, you know, as part of the curriculum where they have the clubs, blockchain clubs and stuff. So, you know, I can see my two-year-old now probably in about 10 or 15 more years. You know, he'll be a blockchain, but of course there'll probably be something else out by time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll be not only on Mars, but probably someplace else out there using blockchain. But the decentralization by storing data across the peer-to-peer network, so I guess you have a network and I have a network and Shadow has a network and we're the peer-to-peer and nobody else is in our bubble, so to speak, I'm guessing. The blockchain eliminates a number of the risks that come with data being held centrally. So, for example, maybe Stokes County Register of Deeds, everything's centralized right there. I'm sure they have backups, but, you know, with this peer chain, it might be held in a cloud in other places where it's duplicated but also protected is what I'm seeing, their decentralization. Peer-to-peer blockchain networks lack centralized points of vulnerability that computer crackers can exploit. So, you know, that's something, you know, seems like every week in the news somebody's hacking, you know, MasterCard or Sears or, you know, and it seems like to me all those records that are being hacked, that this thing is so secure, that maybe that this might be one application that I'm sure all of us would appreciate. Let's see what else we got here. Got several pages, I'm sorry. Openness blockchains are more user-friendly than other traditional ownership records, which while the public still require physical access to view, because the early blockchains were permissionless, controversy has arisen over the blockchain definition. An issue of ongoing debate is whether the private system, which verifies tax and authorized permissible by the central authority, should be considered a blockchain. Proponents of the permission to private chain argue that the term blockchain may be applied to any data structure that batches data into a timestamp block. And then the permissionless is a great advantage to open permissionless or public blockchain network and guarding against bad actors and not requiring the no access control as needed. This means that applications can be added to the network without the approval or trust of others, while blockchain is a transport layer. New York Times noted both in 2016 and 17 that many corporations are using blockchain networks with private blockchains and independent of the public. Some of the disadvantages is Computer Rural Magazine said there's also a need for about 51% attack of the private blockchain, as private blockchains most likely already contain 100% of the block creation resources. If you could attack or damage blockchain creation tool on a private corporate server, you could effectively control 100% of the network and alter the transaction however you wish. This is a set of particularly profound adverse implications during the financial crisis. And then uses, blockchains can be, as we talked about on our show, can be integrated into multiple areas. And primary use of blockchain today is as a distributed ledger or cryptocurrency, most notably Bitcoin. And then there are a few operational products maturing for proof of concept and later in 2016. So it sounds like banks, they're very much a part of it. And I can definitely see it there. But fascinating. I know we don't know what we're talking about. We did have somebody that did, but we didn't understand him. But
maybe one day we will.
You know, this will probably, this show right here will probably be in the Smithsonian 100 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Everybody be saying, hey, I remember that guy on Lou's show.
Yeah, really. Who was Lou?
Yeah.
And what was his show? So
the Land Pro Lou.
So let's wrap it up here. All right. So anyway, thank you for joining us today. Let us know if you liked the show and if you have any guests or topics that you would like to suggest other than what we talked about today. We would appreciate them. All questions are welcome, obviously, and any of our guests may email with your questions or concerns. This show is for the public and mostly importantly for the real estate agents who do not have a source of land education, unfortunately. So it's a free land education show, and I hope all you agents out there take advantage of it. And it's for the public, too. So how do they get in touch with us here at the station?
Well, they can tune in every Saturday morning for your show, Lou, at 7 o'clock in the morning. And they can also download the Simple Radio app and take us anywhere they go.
And the website?
The website. Go to the website. It's WKTE1090.com. And they can click on there and listen to us all day also.
Anywhere in the world,
anywhere,
right?
In the world, yes.
And we're beach music and oldies.
Beach and oldies,
and
yes.
And 5 times we've been nominated the number one station for how many, what area?
For the East Coast.
For the whole East Coast.
Yes.
That is quite impressive. And I think here in a couple of weeks or a month or so, the final vote for who the number one station. Now, you've been nominated 5 times, so let's win this time.
Let's hope so.
So, you know, if you want to know how you can vote for us, call the station. What's the number at the station?
336-983-3111.
Okay, and tell them that you want to help us be the number one
station,
right?
That's right.
They
want to help out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what happens is after we broadcast the show on Saturday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m., for those that like to sleep in, A couple days later, my tech guy downloads the show on my website, which is not my company website, but is Let's Talk Land, www.letstalkland.net, without the apostrophe. And there you can listen to any of the shows. We have, I think this is number 43. And, of course, you've got contact information where you can email me, call me, ask for questions. And that, again, is www.letstalkland.net. We're on Podbean, Spotify, Facebook, YouTube, and more. My email is Lou, L-O-U, at mylandpro.com. My cell number is 336-669-1405 in Chatham. Tell them goodbye.